This is The Guardian.
Today, as COVID case numbers skyrocket, Boris Johnson says no new restrictions are needed in England.
Anyone who thinks our battle with COVID is over, I'm afraid, is profoundly wrong. This is a moment for the utmost caution.
Day after day now, we are witnessing unprecedented COVID case numbers across the UK.
One day last week, we had 200,000 people test positive. And the latest figure today is another 218,000.
The number of people of sick or in isolation is causing havoc across the health service and in schools, with critical workers now being promised daily testing in a bid to keep the country running.
In areas from food processing to transport to our border force, from the 10th of January, we'll be rolling out lateral flow testing for all these workers available on every working day.
And yesterday evening, while the Prime Minister was buoyed by the number taking up booster jabs, he was despairing of those who hadn't.
I mean, how absolutely crazy it is. Absolutely crazy that there are 2 million slots this week for people to get vaccinated, and yet the majority of people in ICU for COVID are not vaccinated.
Despite the record caseloads and a health service creaking under the strain, Johnson said that his strategy is holding.
Different trusts in different places at different moments will feel at least temporarily overwhelmed. And anybody who, you know.
But will this gamble pay off? From The Guardian, I'm Noshin Iqbal. Today in Focus, can Britain cope with a rapid surge of Omicron infections? Nicola Davis, you're The Guardian's science correspondent. And when we last spoke to you on the podcast before Christmas, we were bracing for a huge tidal wave of Omicron infections. So how many people now have it across the country?
Well, that's a good question and something that's actually a little bit difficult to get a handle on. I mean, certainly there has been a huge rise in the number of people with COVID.
As New Year celebrations got going in London, infection rates here are the highest in the country and across England are higher than at any other point during the pandemic.
If we look at the case data, so this is the number of infections that are actually picked up by testing. Not everybody with COVID will necessarily have a test. And the other issue with this data as well is that we've got a bit of disruption over Christmas. So with those caveats in mind, however, the UK has seen record numbers of COVID cases.
We've had a record figure in terms of daily cases, 218,724 new COVID cases. That's a new record for the number of cases reported on a single day.
Another way to look at it is to look at data from the Office for National Statistics Infection Survey. So this is different because instead of just looking at infections picked up by testing, this involves randomly swabbing households and seeing if they've got a COVID infection. That will also pick up asymptomatic cases as well. And the latest data, so in the week ending the 23rd of December, there were 1 in 25 people in the community in England were estimated to have had COVID that week. So we are talking about very, very high levels of infection in the UK at present.
We've had a month now to really study Omicron. How does it work compared with previous mutations? And have claims that it is milder been borne out in the evidence we've seen?
So we have got much more information about Omicron, and things we do know about it is that it does evade past immunity to quite a high degree. That's one of the reasons why there's been this huge push to encourage people to have their booster jabs. In terms of severity, the good news is that recent research in the UK has backed up earlier suggestions that Omicron may cause less severe disease than Delta.
As cases of Omicron continue to climb, a crucial question is how many cases will become NHS patients. Concern over how hospitals will cope have consumed our political leaders. But today came a glimmer of hope in the much-anticipated data. Omicron looks to be less severe, and you're less likely to end up here with it.
There are a couple of things going on here. I mean, you know, you do have the fact that we would expect when you look at buildup of immunity, whether from natural infections or from vaccinations. But there's also been signs that Omicron might inherently produce less severe disease as well. So according to the latest figures from the UK HSA, overall, people with Omicron estimated to have about a third of the risk of hospital admission compared with Delta. And also, you know, when you're looking at severe outcomes, obviously hospitalisation is very important in terms of pressures on the NHS. But obviously also another important metric there is deaths. We've been seeing a rise in cases. We've been seeing a rise in hospitalisations. But deaths isn't showing that same sort of surge. And that's really good news as well. But of course, the concern that we were talking about before Christmas was that even if you have less severe disease, if you have just vast numbers of people being infected, that could still mean a large number of people requiring hospital care. And, you know, at the same time, this is a very steep rise in cases. We can see hospital admissions are going up quite sharply. So the number of people needing hospital care could all come, you know, in quite a short period of time.
And so, as you say, those numbers being admitted to hospital are now rising. Are hospitals coping?
So we are seeing that wave of infections now starting to come through in terms of severe disease. You know, for some hospital trusts, this is now, you know, very, very serious. Several NHS trusts across England have declared critical incidences. And that, although that is, you know, largely also due to staff absences. So you've got two situations here. You've got an increase in the number of patients who require hospital care because of severe disease linked to COVID. And then you also have the issue that because this variant is now so widespread, that means a lot of staff in hospitals are having to take time off because they've got COVID or they need to isolate because of COVID. And of course, that then puts pressure on the healthcare system too.
We are very stretched from a nursing point of view. We've had lots of sickness due to COVID, positive cases and contact. The nurses are all very tired.
You've got this kind of two-way pressure on the healthcare service at the moment.
And we're very used to working through busy winters, but nothing like the scale that we saw last year and what we're bracing ourselves for again this year.
How well are vaccines holding up against Omicron, and how have the booster targets gone?
If we look at the headline figures on vaccinations, I mean, we've got over 90% of people aged 12 and over now have had their first dose. Over 82% have had a second dose, and almost 60% have had a booster or third dose of COVID jab. So we are looking at high levels of vaccine uptake, which is very encouraging. In terms of how well the jabs work, the latest data from the UK Health Security Agency, the UK HSA, there was data released last week which showed that two doses of the Oxford-AstraZeneca COVID jabs really don't offer you protection, much protection at all against symptomatic infection with Omicron. And if you look 20 weeks after a second dose of one of the mRNA jabs, so this is Pfizer, BioNTech or Moderna jabs, you've only got about 10% protection. And if we look at what happens when you have your booster jab, though, it ramps up your protection against symptomatic infection to between 65 to 75% around 2 to 4 weeks after the jab. However, there is some waning there. So they found that about 10 or more weeks after the booster, your protection has declined to 40 to 50%. These jabs are not lasting forever. They do have a sort of a waning over time.
So that's protection against getting the disease with symptoms. But what about the more severe end of COVID? How effective are the jabs there?
If we look at severe disease, which of course is really important when it comes to the number of people needing hospital care, data from South Africa suggested that when you have two COVID jabs, your protection against severe disease with Omicron was around 70%, compared with about 90 to 95% for Delta. So again, you do have that drop off, but the good news is boosters really help.
Nicola, I want to turn to schools now and the effect that Omicron may have on the new term that for many children and young people is starting today. Children and young people are the least vaccinated age group, but how much do we know about the rates of infection among them?
They are very high amongst children. If we look at the Office for National Statistics data, infection levels in England were highest among those aged 2 to year 6. So we're talking sort of age two to sort of primary school age children, about one in 15 people had COVID, and an estimated one in 20 of secondary school age children to year 11 in England had COVID in the same week. So children, there was a very high prevalence of COVID in children. You know, that is obviously a situation which may well affect schools.
And last month, there were some early warnings from South Africa that Omicron may be more dangerous to children than previous variants. How does that look now?
That was a sort of concerning early readout. If we look at a preliminary analysis by the UK Health Security Agency, that suggested that actually there's a lower risk of hospitalisation among Omicron cases in school-aged children compared with Delta cases. Sort of good news so far.
So from everything you've said, it seems clear that, like with workers in the NHS, there will be a lot of teachers who won't be going to work today because either they have COVID or they're isolating as they wait for a test result. Now, the government has said it is desperate to keep schools open. So what is it actually doing?
Yes, keeping children in school in terms of face-to-face teaching has certainly been a priority.
The priority is to keep schools open. 99.9% of schools were open at the end of last year, and I hope we can continue to make sure that that happens.
The Education Secretary, Nadeem Zahawi, has said that schools will have their own supplies of lateral flow tests. He's also announced that educational settings will be given more air cleaning units in a sort of attempt to try to improve ventilation. I mean, one other thing that was brought in was mask wearing in secondary schools. So it was announced that pupils in England should return to wearing masks in classrooms, not just communal areas. That measure was already in place in other countries of the UK.
On the other hand, there's increasing body of scientific support for the idea that face masks can contain transmission. We don't want to keep them on. I don't like the idea of having face masks in classroom any more than anybody else does. We won't keep them on a day more than is necessary.
One issue, as we said there, is whether there will in fact be enough staff. Another approach the Department for Education has taken is to advise schools that they can try to tackle staff shortages by combining classes into larger groups. And there's also been sort of an effort to try to recruit former teachers back into the classrooms. So there have been sort of various approaches taken. Whether it will be enough to prevent large-scale disruption to education remains to be seen.
And in the meantime, we have a testing system that seemed to have failed in places over the holiday period. Do you think it's going to be able to cope with millions of people going back to school and work this week?
I think inevitably the testing system has now got very high pressures on it.
Well, the rise in demand for testing, understandably because of Omicron, globally is at an all-time high.
We do have a limited capacity. It's much, much higher than it was. You know, obviously at the start of the pandemic, we had very little testing capacity, but there will be a point where it is no longer hugely reflective of the number of infections in the community just because there are limits on testing capacity.
Hundreds of millions of new tests have been ordered, and rightly we are prioritising certain sectors, and the NHS is clearly at the top of that list.
Nicola, throughout the past 2 weeks, there's been a lot of speculation that the government would be forced to bring in new restrictions in England. And so far, it hasn't. In fact, it has cut the isolation period following a positive test to 7 days if you can show a negative lateral flow test. Now, we heard what Boris Johnson had to say yesterday, and today Sajid Javid is due to make a statement when Parliament reopens. Does this lack of further restrictions mean we're through the worst of this wave and that hospitalisations are peaking?
I think it's very unlikely that hospitalisations have peaked yet. We haven't seen cases peaking, and we know that cases peak before hospitalisations peak. And obviously the situation in terms of the timing of peaks will be different around the country. There's also the issue that we're now seeing cases rising or infection levels rising in older age groups. So it's moved from younger into the older age groups. And of course, those age groups are those who are generally at greater risk of more severe disease. And in terms of, you know, where we are yet, the government has chosen not to bring in more restrictions. Obviously, the advice from the government scientific advisers was to consider bringing in further restrictions. So I think the situation is still quite concerning. There's still a way to go.
The picture has obviously varied across the country, but the initial surge in Omicron cases was seen in London last month. What's the situation like in the capital now?
So we know that Omicron obviously has spread across the UK with incredible speed, but some areas were hit harder earlier, and London is one of those. So London can be something of a bit of a bellwether, if you like. And Professor Neil Ferguson, who's a leading epidemiologist, has said there is some sign that, at least in those aged 18 to 50, that infection rates may have plateaued.
I think I'm cautiously optimistic that infection rates in London in that key 18 to 50 age group, which has been driving the Omicron epidemic, may possibly have plateaued. It's too early to say whether they're going down yet.
But the rate of cases in those aged 60 plus, based on the latest data, is still going up. So the question still remains, you know, what will happen with hospitalizations? And it's unlikely that that will peak for a little while yet.
And how similar are the positions taken by governments in Wales and Scotland and England in terms of restrictions?
Yes, if you look at what's happening across the different countries in the UK, they have taken different stances.
Over Hogmanay and New Year's Day, and for at least the first week of January, we are advising everyone to stay at home more than normal.
If you look at the situation in Scotland, for example, from the end of last month, groups of people meeting were limited to three households, table services in hospitality settings where you can have alcohol. You know, in Wales, you had things like no more than six people can meet in pubs, cinemas and restaurants. In Northern Ireland, you have nightclubs closed and various other rules. So, for example, in Northern Ireland, no more than six people from different households can sit together in pubs, cafes, restaurants. By no means exhaustive list. So there are different measures that have been brought in different nations in response to what the governments there are seeing in this data, in the latest Omicron data. England hasn't tightened restrictions, though it does have very high infection rates. We have Plan B measures, but that's sort of about it. So it is a different stance that has been taken, and we will have to wait and see how that pans out.
Nicola, when you were last on the podcast, there were SAGE models laying out scenarios for what was about to happen in the coming weeks. Now we're a little further down the line. Is it somewhere near the worst case scenarios, the best, or somewhere in between?
We're certainly not at the worst case scenarios. And that's partly because some of the worst case scenarios, you know, the idea of 10,000 hospitalizations today, was based on Omicron having the same severity as Delta. So that does mean that we're not in those worst case scenario zones now. However, we are still looking at high levels of hospitalisation. In the UK, you know, we've approached 2,000 a day, and we would expect those figures to go up. So I think that the next few weeks could be very difficult, both in terms of absences, staff absences in all sorts of different sectors, but also, you know, we haven't yet seen the peak in hospitalisations, and clearly some hospitals are under a lot of pressure.
Coming up, what will the fight against COVID look like in 2022? Nicola, it is easy to get sucked into looking at COVID on a very local level. But when you take a step back and look at the map of COVID infections across the world, there are around 1.5 million new cases being reported every day. We've seen border closures in Asia and record infections in Europe, where many countries have brought in stricter restrictions, more so than the UK. What can we take from it all?
Clearly, Omicron is, you know, has spread very rapidly around the world, and lots of different countries are now having to tackle the situation caused by this variant. Good news is that in South Africa, which is one of the countries where Omicron was first picked up, there are signs that the wave of infections may have peaked. That's good. You know, hospital admission rates have dropped, so that's very encouraging. It's a very sharp peak. So that is potentially, you know, quite good news. However, other countries are still battling the wave caused by this variant. So if we look at the situation, for example, in the US, COVID cases in Florida have risen by 948% in just 2 weeks. So, you know, really high levels of infection now.
But we begin tonight with Florida's rewriting of its own history book. Tuesday's new COVID case numbers dwarfed by today's record 58,000 new cases on Wednesday.
If you look at the seven-day average for US patients hospitalized with COVID, they saw an increase of more than 40% during the week between Christmas and New Year's Eve.
So it feels like after 2 years of this virus globally, we still have a way to run yet. But just as the Omicron variant has been less severe than Delta, can we expect variants now to diminish in severity and become more and more mild?
Not necessarily. I mean, if we look at previous variants of COVID that wasn't seen with Alpha and Delta. They weren't less severe than the original. It does seem that Omicron is less severe. But, you know, as experts have said, it's not necessarily the case that viruses evolved to cause less severe disease. That will only happen really if it helps their spread, if it helps their transmission. And so if transmission happens before people get to hospital, it's not really, you know, putting a pressure on the virus to become less severe. So I don't think one can assume that that is the case. It might happen, and it seems to have happened with Omicron, but that doesn't necessarily mean it would happen with other variants too.
So what does 2022 look like in the fight against COVID? I mean, yesterday the head of the JCVI said it just isn't sustainable to give booster vaccines to the whole planet every 4 to 6 months, but also that the worst of the pandemic is behind us. When do you expect to be able to get back to a kind of normal life?
I think that it, you know, obviously at the moment we are in the thick of a new wave of a COVID variant, and that has obviously been quite difficult. And I think it's been difficult for everyone to, you know, come to terms with the fact that, gosh, you know, we're back in this situation where things are quite grim at the moment. In terms of where we are and where we're going, I think that obviously vaccines do remain really important. And it's not yet clear how often we would have to have a booster jab. It's not clear whether that would be changed if we had a vaccine which is able to tackle a better sort of multiple variants rather than sort of be designed to handle one variant. That might change the picture as well. We do have a wider range of drugs to treat COVID. I mean, there's an antiviral medicine called Paxlovid, which has just been approved in the UK, and that is helps reduce the risk of hospitalisation and death in people with mild to moderate COVID infection who are at increased risk of having more severe disease. So those kinds of developments are really good news. We've also got the fact that I think everyone has become more familiar with measures that they can take as well, regardless of what the restrictions are. So, for example, if we think about the warnings that Professor Chris Whitty made about, you know, being cautious about socialising in the run-up to Christmas, you know, there was a big change in people's behaviour as well that sort of went beyond what Plan B was saying. So clearly, you know, everyone is a little bit more familiar with how to manage their risk as well. We have lateral flow tests, which are not perfect, but do help to, you know, people to do a test before they go and meet up with others to try to reduce risk as well. So there are positives to look for as well.
In those positives, how positive do you feel? How are you looking ahead at your social life over the next few months?
Well, I think during this Omicron wave, I personally am being very, very cautious. I have been very fortunate not to have COVID as far as I know to date, and I'd like to keep it that way. So I'm being very cautious about socialising at present. And so I have been taking lots of precautions when I'm out and about. It would be lovely to be able to get back to some of the things that I've put on hold. I'm an archer and I want to be able to go shooting again, and I haven't really felt confident doing that for some time. So that would be really lovely to do that. I know a lot of clubs have put in place lots of measures, and you know, I'm really looking forward to getting back to that again. And I don't know if I can say this, I'm getting married in the summer, so I'm also very hopeful that we'll be able to go ahead with our wedding plans.
Nicola, thank you so much, and I hope so.
Well, we definitely will get married. Whether it will go ahead in our current state or not, I'm not so sure.
Well, yeah. Well, big, huge congrats from Today in Focus.
Thanks very much.
That was Nicola Davis, The Guardian's science correspondent. You can follow her reporting on COVID and more at theguardian.com and listen to Nicola on Science Weekly wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design is by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Mithili Rao. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.